Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Everybody is talking right now about the Titanic. Everywhere you go, everybody is... It's on everybody's lips. It's the most fascinating story. And I'm going to talk to an interesting man now, Peter Rastall. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Pete.
Now, first of all, when is the actual anniversary of the Titanic?
Well, it was actually struck by the iceberg, or rather, it struck the iceberg on the 14th of April around about 11:40 a.m. Mm-hmm. Sorry, p.m.
Yep.
And it actually sank on the 15th. So the actual anniversary of the death is the 15th.
Where's your interest come from? Why are you fascinated by it?
Well, about 20 years ago when I was in Belfast, I was looked at an exhibition down there, the River Lagan, on the Titanic. And there was a conspiracy theory then about, it was just touched upon briefly, that when the ship was finished and when it was launched, it had two extra portholes. Which I didn't really pay much attention to it then. But more recently, I got involved with Titanic Promotions, which I'll touch on later. But it's to do with the commemoration of the 100 years of the sinking of the ship.
Right.
Now, when we started this, we were researching everything into the ship, the people who died, everything. And I came across this conspiracy theory again. In fact, I saw a DVD called Why They Sank Her. So we have to find out, first of all, what the Titanic was all about. Now, the White Star Line was in direct competition with Cunard for the transatlantic passengers. And the Cunard line had the Blue Riband, which was the fastest transatlantic crossing. Now, the White Star Line couldn't actually compete with the speed, but what it wanted to do, it competed with opulence and grandeur. In other words, they built these huge ships, and they kitted them out like five-star. Now, there was James Bruce's mate, Lord Pirrie, and John Morgan, who was the financier of the White Star Line. They got together and they were going to build a fleet of three ships. First the Olympic, then the Titanic, and then the Gigantic. Well, they bid the Olympic, and that was a huge success. So a year later, they built the Titanic. Now, when they built the Olympic, there was Captain Smith who was at the helm. Now, just before the Titanic was made ready, Captain Smith had an accident or a collision with HMS Orc, a naval ship. But that was his second accident with the ship within a matter of weeks. But this particular one, it was so severe that it needed to be grounded for a couple of weeks to get it prepared. When they repaired it, they found that the ship had been damaged beyond repair, really, and was more or less a write-off. Now, this would have rendered the White Star Line as open to its creditors. It wouldn't have survived. It went to court, and it was found that Captain Smith was at fault, so they couldn't claim on the insurance. So the theory goes that they patched it up as good as possible. But one weekend, when the Titanic was ready, the Titanic went out, completed its sea trials, and got a clean bill of health. And then one weekend, they paid a lot of men who were dock workers then. And don't forget, there was a coal strike then, so there was a lot of unemployment there. And people would do anything for a few quid. So they employed these people to switch the ships. Now, they had to change all the nameplates and all the life preservers and everything, but it was done over a weekend. And then what happened was that the Titanic, which is now the Olympic, goes on and does its sea trials after the Olympic's repair. And that passes with a clean bill of health. Right, now, so the White Star Line are left with a good ship and a bad ship. Now, the Titanic was supposed to operate from Liverpool. Hence, everything was emblazoned in the word Liverpool was on the stern of the ship. It was on the life rafts. It was on the life preservers. It was on everything that you could see. Now, at that particular time, the Adelphi was built for the launch of the Titanic, and what was supposed to happen was first-class passengers would start their journey in the luxury of the five-star Adelphi Hotel and then get carriages down to the pierhead and board the ship right underneath the Cunard buildings, which was the kind of poke in the eye to the Cunard. And that way, that was the White Star's way of getting trade off Cunard Line. Now that we're left with one ship and one good ship, one bad ship. So now the theory goes that what they decided to do was then to take the ship on its maiden voyage, which was now the Titanic, which was the Olympic, and purposely ram it into an iceberg, side on, so that it would sink. Now, 5 days prior to that, the Californian set sail from London, which was fully laden with coal, but didn't have any passengers on it. It just had a cargo of sweaters. Now, it stopped in the middle of the ice fields, and it remained there waiting for the Titanic to come along and wait for this distress signal. Apparently, though, they got the coordinates wrong, and it was waiting in the wrong place. Well, the rest is history. The Titanic sinks with a great loss of life. And the California never got there in time, but it was the Carpathia that was able to receive a signal and rescue who they could. Now, we've got to ask the question. There's a few things. Well, one of them mainly is Captain Smith. Captain Smith had just crashed the Olympic, but that wasn't the first time he'd had bother with the ship. He'd also crashed the Republic, the Germanic, the Baltic, and the Majestic. He'd also had accidents in them. And you've got to ask yourself, well, why was he given the task of the maiden voyage of the Titanic? Well, the theory goes that the White Star Line were going to drop him, but decided to keep him on if he would carry out this task for them. So when he was asked to do that, he brought on his own crew. And they worked underneath him. Now, if the theory goes, if that was correct, then it all fits into place that James Pierpont Morgan, who was the financier, he cancelled his maiden voyage with the Titanic, and yet he was the main financier. And the reason he picked was the fact that he was ill. But 2 days after the sailing, he was found out in the south of France by the press. There was also 50 first-class passengers who cancelled an hour before. And James Bruce Ismay's wife was Florence. She never went on the maiden voyage either. Now, the captain of the California, Stanley Lord, he took a brunt of the cause of it, and he tried to protest his innocence right up until his death, I think in the early 60s. But his passenger ship was owned by James Morgan, who also was the financier of the Titanic building of the White Star fleet. So he couldn't actually come out with the truth, otherwise it would have been, he would have been blamed even more so, because he was a part and parcel of the conspiracy. Now, this theory even goes right up to the top, right into Parliament, when Lord Asquith was the Prime Minister at the time, and he was kind of held to ransom, because if the White Star Liner had gone bust, so would Harland and Wolff, and would have created a load of unemployment in Belfast. But not only that, James Morgan would have been the chief creditor, who was an American, but he had also given assurances to the Prime Minister that should the outbreak of war, which was likely, he would let them commission his ships for the war effort. But if the White Star Liner had gone bust, he wouldn't have been able to do that. So Asquith's hands were tied. And so what he did, he brought in Lord John Charles Bigham, who was Lord Mersey. And he brought him out of retirement and asked him to hold the inquiry, which he did. And the inquiry ended up basically as a farce. And no blame was given to anybody. And the insurers paid out. But more importantly, the insurers were only expected to pay out $7.5 million. But the week before the Titanic sailed, they upped the insurance to $12.5 million. So that's how much they eventually paid out. So basically, that is the conspiracy theory. There's a lot more detail, a lot more to go into it, but it would take me hours to go into it. But it is a very, very interesting and thought-provoking theory.
Peter, I have never, and my listeners will confirm this, ever been so quiet in my life. That is a hell of a story.
You think so?
A hell of a story. Well, now, tell me, so if the Titanic was swapped, the Olympic, which became the Titanic, is how long did that last for as the Titanic?
Well, the Titanic, now the Olympic, actually lasted another 35 years and was actually commissioned during the war. And it was actually broken up in Southampton in 1935. So it lasted another 25 years, rather.
Now, tell me why you felt the need to put on this event at the Adelphi, and I know you're raising money for charity. Tell us what that's about.
Well, I got asked by a friend of mine, Brian Snagg, who runs Blue Nose Promotions, which he does for the Everton Hall of Fame. And he asked me to, would I be interested in helping him in forming Titanic Promotions? It's a huge event. But the outcome was to raise money for Alderay Children's Hospital. So I looked at the efforts that he was going to do, and I thought it was absolutely tremendous. But he obviously couldn't do it on his own. But I've also got a building background. So one of the ideas which we were going to do is take the Adelphi over for the whole week. We will put on events every night of different music tastes, but more importantly was to build the bow of the ship in the main hull of the Adelphi, which we have done. It's 27 foot high, it's 18 foot long, and it's 13 foot wide. And the theme of the week is that the Titanic has come home, because this was their home port, you see. We've been working on it for a year now, and it's just come to fruition now. So it's going to be a busy week. So if anybody wants to get in touch with us, it can be seen on the set website, www.titanicpromotions.com, or they can ring me direct on 722-5352.
Peter, I've got to ask you, when you looked into this conspiracy theories and you went down this road, have you ever been into that before? Have you ever thought of the conspiracy theories before?
Well, I actually did, you know, because there is an actual case that there are the portholes of the Titanic. They grew by another two. And you can see that's documentary evidence. You can actually see that. But That enough, that in itself is not enough to constitute a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But when you actually... I've got this DVD that was made, and it was called Why They Sank Her. And it's a very, very thought-provoking. It goes in a lot more depth than I've been into it.
Yeah.
There's a lot more facts and figures, and it can't be denied that there's photographic evidence of the RMS Hawk, the damage that it did to the stern of the Olympic. And it was massive. It was a massive, massive damage. And you put two and two together and you go, it's a write-off. And there are people, passengers, who have said that when the Titanic left Southampton, it was listing to port. And when they looked at the damage that was done to the Olympic, if it was repaired, that's exactly what would have happened.
It's interesting, Peter, that the amount of loss of life that somebody who would plan this, if in fact it did happen, could take a chance with so many people.
Well, that is one of the reasons. I mean, see, I can't believe that somebody would do that for money. But then again, there's a lot of greedy people out there that would take a chance. Now, Lord Stanley went out in the California. Now, don't forget, his employer was the also John Morgan was also the financier, the money behind the White Star Line. So nobody could say anything. He couldn't say anything because that was his employer.
Mm-hmm.
The lads in the dockyard, they couldn't say anything because they were under threat by gangsters. These are powerful, powerful men. Now, the only reason that... don't forget, this conspiracy theory has only probably come out about, like, 40 or 50 years ago. And that probably was passed down through generations from the Irish dock workers, you know. And they would pass it on to the family because they wouldn't actually be able to tell it outside the family. And so it will be like, you know, like whispers through the family, and it's eventually come out. Well, it's enough for this company to have made this DVD.
How can they find out more about the week?
If they go on www.titanicpromotions.com, or if they want to pop into the Adelphi, I'm down there most of the time, or catch me on 722-5352.
Peter Astle, you're an interesting man. Thank you for talking to me.
Thanks very much, Pete.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price, on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.